Stay hungry, stay foolish.
Show. It's a great honor to welcome Porik Okeji. Welcome to the show, and a serial entrepreneur, founder of Air Aran, and just non-stop goer. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, Porik.
Thanks a million. No, great to be here.
So it'd be great to understand your mindset. I suppose a great starting point would be when you were teaching, because leaders are teachers, essentially. And that entrepreneurial spirit within the teaching environment and all that kind of thing would be great to understand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I started off in life in accountancy, worked with KPMG, and I quickly decided that this is not for me. And you know, sometimes when you feel you're someplace, you don't know where you want to go to, but you know, this is not the place for me. So I left KPMG. A lot of my friends thought I was absolutely crazy, because KPMG are a great multinational accountancy and business advisory firm. And I decided to go teach in a secondary school.
Wow.
And I loved it. Of all the things I've ever done, teaching was the one I enjoyed most.
I'm sure your parents and everybody was kind of going, you're mad, you're going out of there, that's the mecca.
Well, that's a good point, but to be honest with you, my parents straight were not that much into education. They left school by the age of 10. So it and Connemara and very, very rural working class, and I'd have grown up speaking Irish, and English is my second language. So it wouldn't have been at that time hugely central to the parents. My parents really wanted to raise kids that had integrity, that are hard workers, and were fundamentally good, honest people. Yeah. And that was end of story.
I'm such a huge believer in that grit and determination that comes from that age has such an effect later on in life, and we're seeing the fruits of that with you today. But how do you do that? Because so many parents today are so out of touch with that world that, you know, a bit of adversity, a bit of grit is good.
Absolutely. It's all about grit. I was reading a book recently by an American professor. I think Susan Duckworth, called Grit. And I'm just actually back from Chicago, and I was reading it over there. And in her studies, she has shown, and she's done the studies over 30, 35 years, that kids who are taught grit and determination and sticking with it are those that succeed most in life, particularly when they come up against adversity, when they come up against challenges. And we know, both of us, and you know who's listening to us, that you're going to get challenges, you know, negative things, and pardon what I'm going to say, shit happens, things happen. So what do? You have two choices. You can sit in your arse and feel sorry for yourself, or you can pick yourself up and say, all right, what I learned from that, let me go on, let's see how good I am now, let's see what I'm made of now. And that's grit.
Yeah, and it only comes from that piece of adversity, because I often think in life today, like, I'm not saying I'm putting my kids through a bad time, but, you know, I let them make the mistakes. I can see, you know, he's gonna fall. I'll let him fall so he learns. Because if I actually clear the barrier for him, or, you know, they call them lawnmower parents today,
yeah,
or helicopter parents who are hovering over and doing everything for the kids, that they're not going to learn, because they're not hitting at much adversity. And then the other flip side is that instead of raising the bar, everybody's raising the floor to make the bar more achievable.
It's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, and you see it all the time, and it does have a massive effect on business, and it's getting softer. And I'm not saying it has to be hard, but even you see it in sport, the adversity is what makes the champion. It has to be.
Exactly. It's the times that you fall on your backside and you decide to pick yourself up, and you actually start creating, this is going back into neuroscience, you start creating new thought patterns in your brain, so that then when it happens next time, you don't start going into a sense of feeling sorry for yourself, a sense of depression and so on, and poor me and all of this. You say, okay, fine, that happened. Now, let me learn. Where do I go from there? And God knows I've got more kicks in the arse than a lot of people, so I have.
Yeah.
And thank God, because it makes you who you are. or it breaks you, and you got to decide. It's your call. And absolutely, it's in the kids and how we train them and how they approach life. For me, my parents were not reading PhD studies and so on and so forth and reports from professors. It's just the way we were, and it's the way we grew up, and the people in my neighborhood grew up in Connemara. But there's also another study out there called the Marshmallow Effect. You're familiar with
Brilliant,
that?
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic
go,
one.
Go ahead.
With kids. Yeah. Well, basically, there were kids brought into to a room, and they were offered, there was on the table there, on the saucer, there were a couple of marshmallows, and the kids were told, these were kids that were 3, 4, 5 years of age. Now, you're going to be here for 10 minutes, and if you take one of those marshmallows, or bite it, or eat it, well, that's it. But if you don't, if you leave it there, don't eat it until I come back in again in 10 minutes' time, I'm going to give you 10 more marshmallows. Most of them looked at it, moved around. It's a great YouTube video on it.
Yeah.
And most of them actually picked it up.
Yeah.
But those that didn't, those that had the conscious mind and saying, I am not going to go and do this, I'm going to wait for the bigger reward, and they kind of suffered or challenged themselves on the smaller one, they're the ones that actually in 20, 30 years' time succeeded more in life.
They followed them all the way through. It was an amazing
study. They followed them all the way through, yeah. Exactly.
Do you know what? I read that, Porrick, and an incident happened then with my son Josh. He was 4 at the time. So we were in Smith's toy store, and he was having a look at Christmas time, and he saw this Batman robot, right? It was €99. So it's nothing you'd buy quickly like that. And we don't do it again to teach him to earn it. Mm. And he had this kind of just, I have to have it, I have to have it. And totally out of character for him. And we kind of looked, my wife and myself looked at each other and kind of went, no, not definitely not getting it from now. So I went home after, and it was just after I read the Marshmallow Effect story. And I created a grid with 99 boxes in it. And he had to, every time he did something good, he'd get a euro. And every time he earned it, he got to tick the box. He adores that toy because he worked for it.
Yeah.
And it's that. And that came from actually that mindset. And he's going to go, the easy thing to do, and I say to him, the easy thing for me to do is say, yeah, and buy you sweets or do something for you. The hardest thing is to say no, Josh. And I teach him that. And it's in a business world, we need more of that.
Absolutely. And when you look at business world, professional rugby, professional sports, world-class athletes, look at the effort that they put in with little or no reward. And they're running a 100 metres final in the Olympics, and it's down to 9.8 seconds. And the years of training, blood, sweat and tears that go into that. And they're not even sure they're going to win it. But you know, there's something inside driving them to say, I'm going to give it my best shot. And I've been mentoring a number of athletes, professional athletes and Olympic athletes over the years. And there was one guy in particular, an amazing person, a Limerick man, a fella called Sam Lynch. Sam is an amazing man. And Sam won every race he competed in rowing for about 5, 6 years. And I remember watching him in the world finals on Eurosport in, I think, Seville in Spain. And he won by a country mile. And Sam came back into Dublin Airport, and I had a conversation with Sam. He called me up, and I was in the office in Dublin Airport, and we had a glass of water. Sam wasn't drinking coffee at the time. And I said to him, Sam, how did you feel after winning by such much? And he says, I felt fine, but okay. And I said, well, the first time you won the world championship, he said, that was better. And I said, why was it better? Because he says, I just about won by the skin of my teeth. And I said, why was that better? Because this time you won by a proverbial mile. He says, because when I got out of the boat this time, I knew I hadn't put 100% of my effort into it. Winning for, in my view, for world-class athletes and world-class entrepreneurs and business people is more about the effort you make in achieving it rather than the medal or the trophy at the end of it.
Yeah, it's the journey.
It's the journey.
Yeah.
Now you have it and won. It's the journey. And what's important about the journey? Critical thing about the journey. It's like going along a road, you're going to fall into the hole every now and again. You're going to go off by the wayside. Everything happens to all of us. You pull yourself back up again. But the critical part of it is who you journey with.
Yeah.
It's the people you journey with.
That's
going
picking
to
your team, is it?
It's picking your team. There's a very, very, very interesting concept called your secure base. And your secure base, this came to me from actually George Kohlreiser, professor in IMD. And he puts it really well. Your secure base is where are you secure at? If you're building a house, you're building a foundation and you build from there. And if the foundation is solid, you can build a good solid house. It's same thing about our lives. Same thing about business. Same thing about me and same thing about you. Do you have a secure base there? Who are in your secure base? Do you have people in your secure base who actually gives you energy or draws energy from you? If they draw energy from you, you should not have them in your secure base because that's weakening your secure base. The other part about your secure base is what are your goals and objectives? What do you want to achieve? And how are you willing to push yourself and sacrifice, which is what we're talking about, to achieve those objectives? What am I willing to give up? How important is it to me? And that goes down to something called passion. And passion then goes back to the fundamental, your purpose. What's your purpose in life?
Yeah.
What are you all about?
Yeah.
What are you here for? Like, an amazing professor of strategy in Harvard, a lady called Cynthia Montgomery, and I studied under her, and she talked about strategy in business. And we talk about innovation and entrepreneurship and business, people starting up in business. You ask yourself, what is your strategy? And strategy means different things to different people. But Cynthia does it in one sentence. And I'm doing it for myself. And I'm asking you, and anybody who's listening, ask yourself this question about yourself. And then ask yourself this question about your business. What is the world with you versus the world without you? Do you make a goddamn difference?
Yeah, and big question.
But a fundamental question. And if you're doing a job, or if you're in a business, that it really doesn't really make much of a difference, well, then as John Wayne once said, when you're on a dead horse, you might as well get off because you're not going anyplace. Yeah. So the world with you versus the world without you. And I have that. I've an office at home, nice office at home, and I have a big thing up. What's the world with me, Porrick, versus the world without?
Ask yourself every day.
Ask yourself every day. Do you make a difference? And the difference is connected to your purpose.
And you know, it's funny because, if you think about social entrepreneurs and people who are doing charity for the right reasons, like the reward, they're almost disregarded, I think, a lot. They're underappreciated a lot because that is what drives them, that mindset. And it's something we don't celebrate in the world, really. We don't celebrate. And you have companies ticking a box, sticking a CSR program or sticking a logo at the end of it.
And it's back to, you're a professional athlete. It's back to, why do you get back out of bed in the morning? You've got the knocks, you've got the pains, your muscles are aching. But yet you go back out again and you do it again because you're passionate about it. And you believe that you can make a difference.
Yeah. And that, so you, I would have loved to have you in school. So we'll get back to the journey because it's so obvious that it is a journey for you, that life is a journey. And so you were teaching then.
Okay. Yeah. Back to where we started. I was teaching. I love teaching. And I realized after a short while, like anything I ever did, or please God will do in life, the main thing is really that I give it the best shot I can. Otherwise, Porrick, there's no point in being involved in it. I'm going to give it my best shot. And when I was teaching, I was giving it my best shot. So I started off in teaching and I modeled myself on the best teacher I felt I had in school. Because I was teaching in the school that I was a student in.
Wow.
So, and then I realized, okay, that got the bar up a little bit. And it was good, it was significant. But I said, can I do better than that? I said, well, I cannot try and be like somebody else. I got to be myself. So I started kind of saying, bringing my own personality into the classroom. And then I realized, can I go any further? And this is 25 years ago. And what I actually started teaching those kids to do, two things. I used to teach them how to visualize.
Wow.
In the classroom.
25 years ago. Wow.
Yeah.
Where did you get that from? Because that's...
I didn't get it from stuff I didn't get it from other schools or other education. Yeah. It's just something that I started reading about and learning and how the brain works and how we absorb information. And I started instinctively feeling I got to cut down barriers here. And if somebody has got barriers with issues or challenges they have outside of the classroom, it makes it more difficult for them to learn in the classroom. So if I get them to relax, meditate, they call it mindfulness now. That's a new term that wasn't there 25, 30 years ago. Well, then I get them to think in a space and to take away all the masks, to take all away all the burdens, and then they're ready.
Wow.
And that was the first part of it. The second part of it, my role was not to teach. It dawned on me that I'm Porrick, you're not a teacher. That's not your role. Your role is the opposite. And the opposite to teaching is to facilitate learning. When you facilitate learning, you create the environment within which the students go to the well themselves, want to go to the well, and they decide how much water they're picking out of the well. So I used to get my students to write their, I used to teach maths and other subjects, I used to get them to write their own Leavenstert maths book. So every one of the 30 students would have a different Leavenstert maths book because it was individual to them.
Wow.
You know, and they use different colours. So maybe a red might mean something really strong to you in relation to this, an important point. Green or blue or black or something else could mean something different to somebody else. So when they're revising their stuff for the Leavenstert, they're reading over their own book, stuff and their own notes in their own way.
Brilliant.
And you can see how it clicks.
Yeah.
And
the triggers, the mental triggers of it.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
They're not trying to interpret somebody else. They're interpreting what they have themselves, what's already in there. And then you teach them how people learn. And this I was doing with the kids in Leavenstert. It's visual, it's auditory and kinesthetic. And we're all dominant in one or the other. So I used to get them to figure out which one of them they're dominant in.
So you're personalising it then. I mean, that this stuff still isn't being done. And like there's, you know, you see PowerPoints, death by PowerPoint in business all the time. And you're going to go, you know, put up an image and talk over it because that's how I'll remember.
But the best PowerPoint ever, you won't get it in software. The best PowerPoint ever created is the PowerPoint that's between your ears. And all you need to do is to click on that and open it up.
Unleash it.
I cannot do it for you. You've got to do it yourself. And all the teacher can do is to bring the student to the water. All you can do is to show them the way. They've got to do the journey.
The more and more you hear about kids are being taught and how best the way they're optimized to be taught, it's the same. That doesn't change throughout life. An adult's the exact same. They learn the exact same way, visually, kinesthetically, all those things. And in innovation programs, all it is facilitation. You're just facilitating innovation. It's almost like, and you go back to the foundation. You're laying the foundation for innovation to happen, and you're facilitating it, and you're letting people come forth with ideas and then activating their ideas.
Yeah. So, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you think businesses grow, companies grow?
People.
Exactly. Give me five.
Yeah, it's the only thing. Like people leave people and people join people. And it took me a while to realize that. It just has to be about the people. And I feel sometimes startups in particular rush their hires because everything's in a rush.
That's a very, very important point, I think. The most important point for startups is actually who you work with.
Mm.
Not necessarily the idea, because the idea is going to change and remodel. I've been a judge and chairman of the judges of the EY Entrepreneur of the Year for a long number of years, and I judged the World Entrepreneur of the Year for 2 years running, and I've seen a whole lot of companies and a whole lot of businesses and a lot of them in growth. And you're right, companies don't grow, people grow.
Mm.
So you're an entrepreneur listening to this podcast. Focus on your people, and your people will grow the business with you.
Mm.
And they don't work for you, they work with you. And you're so, so right. Innovation is creating the environment within, and you to facilitate people, taking off the mask, taking away the challenges, feeling free, and actually just coming up with whatever they come up with. And it's all important and it's all relevant. And it's the same as teaching or facilitating learning.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing.
But it's just, that's why I was like, it'd be great to get the overview of the Porrick O'Cagey mindset, because like that, even then, what you were doing was so far advanced. And those kids, I'm sure, like, if you did a marshmallow effect and followed them through, there's a hell of a lot of success stories from there.
They're great, great young people.
But so back to the timeline, I suppose. So yeah. Teaching was, and then that came to you grew out of that, essentially.
What happened then was I decided to take a career break. And I'm also a lawyer, a solicitor. So I said, I'll set up a law practice. So just like that. And I actually thought, hey, I'll get an office in Galway. I'll open the door and people will come. Didn't happen like that. So I was pretty stuck for money because I would say my background was very working class. We didn't have a lot of money. So I decided to set up a music school. Now, I don't play music, but there was only one school in Galway City that music was being taught to Leaving Cert, and there's a lot of secondary schools in Galway City. So at 4 o'clock in the evening, when the kids had finished their normal school, students 12 to 18 year old, I'd take away all my files in the office and I'd put them in a back room. And we'd take out keyboards and stuff like that. And it was a music classroom until 9 o'clock at night. At 9 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock in the morning, depending how I was, I'd go in and I'd move everything away into the law practice until 4 o'clock in the evening.
You know, it reminds me of that sketch, you know, where there's a cafe and then the police, it's a poker room, and then the police come in, they press the button and all the tables turn around.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. It's a bit like that. But I needed the rental income from that to pay for the
maximize
rent.
Maximise it, yeah.
Exactly. That's basically it.
Wow.
So went on from there and... then there was a little airline flying to the Aran Islands and it was in some financial difficulty, and I knew nothing about aviation. I remortgaged my home and ended up buying it, and then Jesus. Created another airline out of that. And that other airline is Aer Lingus Regional now, and built that up to probably 130 million turnover a year, something like that, making good profit, doing quite well, won a whole lot of awards. And then I'm kind of fast tracking all of this.
Fast forwarding over all the success stuff.
Well, there was a lot, as I said at the beginning, I got a lot of kicks in the ass. I fell down. Yeah. I fell off the horse lots of times.
Yeah. And it's that stuff that's important. I suppose, you know, your humility and leadership, that you're willing to share that, because so many don't.
Well, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
You know, I've no issue with that. I've no problem with failure, because I've had to learn how to deal with it.
It means you're doing something as well. It means you're trying.
Exactly. It is. Don't fear failure. Go for it.
And you know what? I have to say, because I've two young kids, 6 and 3, two boys, and you know, it's almost, there's pressure on them now, because they're only seeing the best foot forward stuff, and I, like, I'm telling them, like, it was amazing once actually somebody asked him, what's your daddy ever taught you? He goes, my son said, six, Josh and Jake, failure's okay. And I was just good, so proud actually that they had that then. And Josh says, yeah, but it's only okay if you learn from it. And I said, good man, Josh, good man.
I don't know where to go from here. I was going to go back and talk about the early days in Air Ireland, airline.
Yeah.
And one of the things we did is, I could not get people out of Aer Lingus really to work with me or Ryanair. One is, I couldn't afford the salary. This is when you're talking about innovation and startup. Secondly, they all knew I knew nothing about what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because I had no aviation background or anything at all like that. And they were in sound, secure jobs with where they were working. Why would they jump ship?
Yeah.
But quite frankly, what you do is you work with the people you can get who go with you, and you actually start sharing the vision with them. And then it becomes actually their vision. It's not your vision. Yeah. The best leaders, and I tell this story, and I love this guy to bits in different ways. Amazing man. Peter Stringer. Peter Stringer was there. He'd be there at the back of the scrum. And the guys are going forward, be it Clahazy in the day or Paul O'Connell or you or any of the lads.
Yeah.
And they're the head down and they're really pumping the feet going forward. And you know what Peter is doing? He's leading them, but he's leading them from behind.
Yeah.
And he's tapping them on the backside, go left or go right. That, to me, is the essence of great leadership. Great leaders can create an amazing team with average players. Look at Connacht and Leinster. John Muldoon and Pat Lam and all that came from Eric Elwood.
Yeah.
We're talking about Eric earlier.
But you know what as well? I have to say in the Connacht thing, grit and determination. New Zealand. So the likes of Carlos Spencer, for example, he said that his choice was either to be an All Black and represent his country, or else if he wasn't, he probably would have ended up in prison. But I remember back in 2004, the All Blacks were facing a crisis. At the time, their 75% winning record was slipping away. And they had Tana Umanga was threatening to quit. They came last in the Tri Nations with him as captain. And in the 5 years since 2010, the record is, which is 89%, had changed back in 2004 to that 76.4% or whatever it was. And this was crisis time in New Zealand. And Graham Henry, I think, was the coach at the time. And they went into a room and they did a three-day crisis meeting. And they came out with the strategy, good people equal good All Blacks. And that was the strategy, purely. And they got rid of ego, got rid of prima donnas, and the team just is unstoppable. Look at Sonny Bill Williams giving his medal away
to a child you never met before.
Yeah,
bringing it back, bringing that back to Ireland. Look at Brian Cody and Kilkenny. It's exactly the similar strategy that man had. He has reinvented, innovated Kilkenny hurling at least four times in the past 18, 19 years that he's been a manager there of it.
Yeah.
And you'd say, what is it?
Yeah.
And it's exactly back to, they play like a family through grit.
Yeah.
And they journey together.
Yeah.
And they will not let the other person down.
Yeah, and then there's the work rate, but that comes as a result.
But that comes as a result natural. Of that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the
exactly.
shared vision.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's interesting because I was thinking about you from the outside, and you know, being able to move from industry to industry and succeed in them, even though you know you didn't know anything about aviation. There's a great book on habit. There's one by Nir Eyal, and there's another guy, Charles Duhigg, and they talk about keystone habits. Right, so. A keystone habit is something that you pick up that will have a knock-on effect on every other habit. And they talk about corporations having this keystone habit. So if a corporation has a habit of hard work or a habit of vision and everybody shared, that can be applied to anything. And it's like, I think of you because your habit was leadership and people and facilitation, and that can be applied to any business and that will lead to success.
I'm kind of... It's difficult for me to reply to.
No, but sorry. We'll get back onto the timeline. Get back on the timeline. So you're Air Aran.
So Air Aran, and then in, when was it? About 2006 or 2007. I was getting blackouts.
Wow.
And I didn't tell anybody about it. And there was...
Air Aran World, was it?
Air Aran World, yeah.
Do you want some water?
No, I'm good. I'm not getting one now. I knew you were worried there.
Turn on the fans.
No, I'm okay. But I was buying another airline in England, and I contacted my wife because, you see, my family, including me, we're fundamentally Connemara people, and we love living there, and that's part of who we are, and that's part of our fabric. You mentioned All Blacks, like that jersey in New Zealand. And
Connemara All Blacks, you remember them?
I do, I played against them.
I got hammered by them.
Oh, they're tough men.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God, they're tough men.
The wind has nearly cut through.
I think they find the pitch on the top of the mountain that's kind of the strongest wind.
Leave on the hoses on them for 3 days.
I know, they're great people. But, jeez, where was I?
So you were buying an airline.
Oh, yeah, buying an airline. I asked Kathleen, my wife, would she come over to London because I'd been going hard for a while. And anyway, I didn't end up buying the airline, but I was in a subway station. I ended up getting a blackout.
Jesus.
Took a few hours before I was in an ambulance and took a few hours before I could kind of get back together again. And she said to me afterwards, said, look, you've got a decision to make here.
Where were you in the subway? Was she there with you?
She was, yeah.
She's with you, thank God.
So at that stage, I decided to pull back significantly from running Air Aran, and I did. And got another guy, really good guy, to run the company. And that was fine. But then in 2010, I'd done a deal with Christoph Müller, this guy who ran the company. He retired and somebody else came in. But did a deal with Christoph Müller and Aer Lingus that we'd start Aer Lingus Regional. You know, so we changed the whole business model of the airline to being a kind of a franchise of Aer Lingus, and that was working really well. And between the recession, Ryanair attacking us, particularly on Cork Dublin, which was 47% of our business,
oh,
and
wow.
They charged €10 each way in fares, and we couldn't compete with that. And believe it or not, the volcanic ash.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, that almost closed us down. So I took the company into examinership.
Wow.
Went into examinership. I had 5 suitors who wanted to reinvest in the company with me and taking it out of examinership. I ended up going with one of those, Eddie Stobarts in the UK. And I had a smaller shareholding, which was fine. But then in 2012, I got a heart attack. And in actual fact, I was with Alan Mulholland in Galway, who was manager of the Galway football team, another really good guy. And he was aware of what I did in rugby in mentoring program, and he wanted me to create a mentoring program for the Galway football team. So I was having a meeting with him, and I started getting a pain in my side. I didn't know what it was. And catches my breath when I speak about it, so excuse me. So I said to Alan, I have a pain in my side. And he said, I was in the gym that morning at 7:30. No, I've ran for 3-4 marathons and about 20 half marathons.
Yeah.
I was in the gym that morning and I thought I was fine. You know, and this is actually something that people who are fit, you say, okay, there's a lot of stress in my life, which there was with the airline and trying to keep it going. And what am I doing to counteract that stress? Well, I'm keeping fit. I'm careful about what I eat. I drink very little. So I'm fine. That doesn't mean you're fine just because you're fit. I had a full medical done 6 months before I got the heart attack, and I was told I was fine. In actual fact, they had to stop the treadmill because they said people of your age usually last about 10 minutes, maybe 11 minutes on the treadmill. There's 20 minutes gone here and you're still going.
Mm.
So, you know, it doesn't mean
yeah.
you're fine.
Nothing to do with it. Yeah.
So I left Alan. I said, I need to go to a doctor. Alan said, Were you in the gym this morning? Did you do weights? And I said, I did. And he said, maybe you would pull muscle. And I knew it wasn't. And I was in the car and I actually knew I was dying.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not easy to say something like that,
yeah.
But that's what I felt. And then I saw Alan running. I was trying to drive the car, but I had a difficulty in coordinating what was in my brain to put it through to my feet.
Wow.
Because my brain, I was fighting the pain. And
yeah.
I said, I'm not going to give up easily. So Alan decided to look for me. He does not know until today why he looked for me. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
Just something told him to look for me.
Yeah.
He didn't know where I was parked. He didn't even know what kind of a car I drove. First place he looked, he found me.
Wow.
He pushed me into the passenger seat, drove me to the hospital, which is about a mile, maybe a mile and a half away, or thereabouts. There was no traffic on the road. There usually is a lot. And I got inside the door of the hospital. And I went down into A&E. And Alan had to try and park the car. But he said, you get inside the door of the hospital at least. So I did. And there a nurse or doctor, I don't know, brought me into a cubicle. Now, that lady was meant to leave and to get some stuff to, some equipment to test me with. But for some reason, she doesn't know why she didn't leave. She didn't leave. She stayed there with me. And it was during that time my heart stopped, first of all. And she used CPR to get me back. And she cracked a few. That's neither here nor there, cracking ribs. And then it was an emergency situation. I still didn't know what was wrong with me. And I was gone. I was flatlined
clinically,
for a while.
Yeah.
And then the CPR got me back. And then they were rushing me down a corridor. I didn't know where I was going up, but I saw I was going to an operating theatre because I could see the lights and people in the doctors and nurses and scrubs, and they cut off my trousers and they started doing something there on my groin area. I didn't know what they were doing. I still didn't know what was wrong, but the pain was 10 out of 10, but I was saying, I'm not giving up. And it's during that process that my heart stopped a second time. Anyway, long story short, afterwards, great cardiologist Kieran Daly happened to be there and told me afterwards what happened. And I asked him, I says, he said, there's a stent in there. I said, sound? I said, I hope it's a Galway stent. And exactly, he laughed at me. And he says, it is. Yeah, why do you ask? I said, who made it? And he said, Medtronic. I said, that's great. Good. I have a Galway stent in there that's keeping the heart going. Because, and then I says, I wonder, would you have the part number? He looked at me and he kind of, I knew I'd said the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Because stents don't have part numbers. They have serial numbers. Yeah. If it's a piece, if it's a part of an airplane or a motor car, it's a part number.
Yeah, you know,
but not a stent. So he says, I can get you the serial number for it. It's great. He said, what do you want it for? I said, do you know what I want to? I want to go out to Medtronic and I want to find out who was on the assembly line when this stent that's in my heart, who made it. And I want to talk to them and I want to tell them, guys, you don't make widgets, you save people's lives.
Brilliant.
And I'm one of them.
Wow.
And I went out there and I
did
happened to meet them. It was incredibly emotional for me and actually for them.
Wow.
But
that, I mean, imagine the change in their lives now that, you know, because that talk about vision from a company to go, you know, we don't make parts, we save lives.
Exactly. Well,
that's a vision. Like
that's what they do. Wow. That's what they do. Well,
but I wonder, did they know that? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, they do now.
They do now? Yeah.
They do. They do. They're good people. They're really good people. But you said there, look how that changed their lives. Look how it changed my life.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a life without those people.
Yeah.
You know, and I just wanted to go back and to say, thanks. Yeah, I am one example of hundreds of thousands of people that you help every day of the week. And Boston Scientific and a lot of tech med companies and others. Doing stuff like that, and you know, very often, and I'm the same. I go around in my own bubble.
Yeah,
you know,
because you don't know,
and you don't not realizing the effect and impact you can have on different people.
Yeah,
you know, on people you don't even know.
Yeah, but I suppose you had that mindset of mentorship. I mean, the mentor, the word in your ear when you're down. And you're near the end, you're running out of runway. And the positive word in here can change lives. It can change directions.
Oh yeah.
It can get you through. Yeah. And it's so powerful.
Yeah. And then talking about grit, I spoke to God.
During that period.
Yeah. And I as I said earlier, I knew I was dying. And I said, God, I'm going to give it my best shot. I'm going to do my best to stay here. But if I'm going to go, I go. But I asked myself the question, am I ready to go? Am I ready to die? Am I okay to die? Can I accept that? Before I answer that question, I asked myself two other questions. I said, will my wife and family be okay after I die? I said, yeah, they'll be okay. Second question I asked myself, did I give life the best shot I could? 100%. And then I said to myself, Jesus, Porrick, you made a lot of mistakes in life. That's okay. That's human. I did things in hindsight I shouldn't have done or should have done differently. That's human. You're flawed, Porrick. I said, I am. That's human. So I accepted myself as a human, and yet I gave it the best shot I could. With all those mistakes and all those errors and falling on my arse and all those kind of things, I did those things. And if I was doing it again, I'd probably do it differently. I don't know. And I said, God, I don't know if you're a man or a woman, but I'm okay to move on, but I'm still going to fight. I'm going to give it my best shot.
Yeah.
And that's a conversation that I'm fortunate that I can share with you, because not many people who are in that situation come back and can do those things.
Yeah. And it's such a powerful message, because you talk about, you know, a boat is not meant to be in the harbour. It's supposed to be out in the ocean.
Exactly.
And trying things. And it's, you know, for people stuck in jobs they don't want to be in or they're unhappy, that, you know, get away from the harbour.
Yeah, exactly. What I love people doing. I really love seeing that you can make a difference to people's lives.
Mm.
I hope to God there are people maybe listening to this podcast now and they're driving the car someplace, or they're just walking along and listening to it, or they might be at an airport, and they say to themselves, this guy, these two guys I'm listening to, are, they're flawed, they have weaknesses, they've failed. They're willing to expose those failures and flaws. There's nothing wrong with that. But my good God, they're giving a shot of it. They're giving life their best shot.
And don't take shots at the person who puts their head above the parapet.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it happens.
It does happen, unfortunately.
They call it, have you heard of the tall poppy syndrome? Have you heard that phenomenon?
Exactly. Snip it off.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be
drag
above.
It down. Yeah. But it's so important. I saw a thing the other day, and it said, as well, like, apart from doing something for yourself, do something for someone else, because it said help someone that needs help, because you might be the only person who does, you know. And it's so important to, if you're any position of power or you have any kind of a influence, it comes with great responsibility. Even a parent, your responsibility is to do the best job you can.
Exactly.
As a leader of a business, as an entrepreneur, as a startup guy, do the best job you can. And yeah, as you said, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but bounce back.
And we're all leaders. We're all leaders in different ways. There are times where we're part of a team and we're not leading, and there's other times where we're leading, not part of a team. Like, parents are leading their kids lots of times. I have a son, Cahill, he's 28. He's passionate about rugby too, so he is. Great young lad. He's the best son I have. He doesn't like me saying that, because he's the only son I have.
I have to say, you're my favourite oldest son. You're my youngest son.
yeah. So he's a great guy, and we're like brothers. We're each other's best friend.
That's phenomenal.
But my role with Cahill now is very different to what it was when he was 3, 5, 10, 15 years of age. The relationship changes, and in actual fact, you know what's happening now? He's a way, way better entrepreneur than I ever could dream to be. And I learn from him, and I listen to him, and I contact him for advice. Hey, what do you think? What would you do here? And the roles change. And it's important for us to allow those roles to change, because that's growing.
Yeah.
So it is. Control can be good and can be bad. It depends on the context and when you use it.
Nice.
And power can be good and can be bad. It depends on the context in which you use it. Energy can be good and bad, depending on the context and when you use it. And you just need to create awareness of those three areas and what is appropriate and what time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not about me or you or us anyway. You know, we're only a small speck in a bigger picture, but we're a very important speck on it.
Yeah. But the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but the apple got the best nourishment and the best facilitation to grow with you as a father, you know. So,
well, he's seen it warts and all.
Yeah.
Like, he's been close to it. Like, the other thing, though, about, let's say, family, quite frankly, and I'm kind of broadening it out rather than just me and Cahill, because it's there as well. The whole emotional side of it is really important. And sometimes the emotional side of a relationship can override the practical side of decision making in relationships. So one needs to be really, really, really careful about that, and to be able to separate the two from each other. A number of years ago, it's back in 2011, I was in Heathrow Airport, and my flight to Dublin was delayed a good while. I think Heathrow was fogged in or something like that. And I bought a book and I started reading it. And by the time I got to Dublin, I had the book read. And I said, wow, this is an amazing book. And it's one of the best books I've ever read. And what I did then is I'll tell you a bit more about the book. I managed to contact the guy who wrote the book. And I said, do you do any workshops on this area? Because I said, I learn more from a practical workshop than I do just from reading a book. And he says, no, I'm really busy at the moment. He says, I'm really busy right through 2012, maybe in 2013. And he says, I was emailing him, giving my name and details. And he says, if I'm going to do workshops, I'll let you know. That's brilliant, thanks. I said, what are you so busy at in 2012? Well, he says, I'm the head of the performance coach for the British Olympic team. I said, wow, it's amazing. And then kind of it synced with me about this book and where he was at. Since then, I've become reasonably close to this guy's company because there's great learning in it. And the name of the book is called The Chimp Paradox.
Oh, I love it.
Do you know it?
I've read it. It actually helped me Steve so Peters. Much. I wish I read it when I was playing rugby.
Yeah, that's the point. That's I wish I read
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Yeah. 30 something I didn't know he was working with them, yeah.
Well, I'm not working with him. I'm working with his company.
Yeah, yeah,
no, I don't mean working in the sense of reward and finance and that kind of a thing. Yeah. I got to go.
I know. Absolutely. We could go on all day and it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Porrick Okeji, serial entrepreneur, founder of Air Ireland and leader in life. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. That was very kind. Thanks.